Cowboy.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. Tony D and Ron Culver. All right, sometimes I'm like anybody else, right? I make a prediction on a game. I'll say like, oh, I think the Cowboys are going to show up and win, and then they don't. Or I think the Astros are going to sweep the Rays, and they don't. And then sometimes I land it with a perfect 10. Earlier this season, during the summer, I said, I think the Florida Gators are going to be a fantastic football team this year. Here's the thing. I am so amazed that this ended up being right. I loved what the Florida Gators were bringing into the season. The confidence of Felipe Franks, a really good defense, very well coached in Dan Mullen, good recruits. A little bit concerned on things like the offensive line, but other than that, I thought they brought together a really, really good football team. When Felipe Franks went down in their game against Kentucky and in came Kyle Trask, I thought that ride was going to be over. Not that anything wrong with Kyle Trask. I even said it at the time. It's so different in college than in the NFL, because in the NFL, you do have backup quarterbacks who are not starters, and you end up having third string guys who are really not starters, because if they were legit starters, they would be, you know, starting somewhere. Some team would pick them up and make them the starter. In college football, guys choose schools for a variety of different reasons. And a lot of times you have a backup quarterback who's a five-star recruit. Sometimes he's a four-star recruit, whatever it is. So you're not really going into no man's land on the depth chart. And they did it with Kyle Trask. The Gators beating the Auburn Tigers on Saturday was a big surprise to me, because I like Auburn a lot. And I still do, actually. I think the problem with, they lost one of their key runners for this season, but I still like the way they're put together. But that was a big win for Florida, because Florida has had doubters all the way through this unbeaten season so far. And a lot of it had to do with the fact that Kentucky really gave that game away, and Kentucky's not a good football team, but they gave that game away in Lexington. There were too many opportunities for them to close out Florida and didn't close out Florida. There were some coaching decisions. But this weekend in Baton Rouge, if the Gators lose, I'm wondering how many people are going to say, I knew it all along. Great teams are going to go to Baton Rouge and lose against Joe Burrow and the Tigers. It doesn't make Florida a less than program if they do that. And they would obviously still be in the great run to get to the SEC championship game. Just curious to see how it plays out.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. So I was telling you about the Florida Gators. They are it's 6-0 right now. And just coming off this win against Auburn. Now, granted, I think the reason why people are not really jumping all up and down about the Gators is because there's the Auburn win in the swamp was their biggest win of the season. They were struggling against a not very good Kentucky team. They easily beat a terrible Tennessee team. They routed Towson, of course. They beat UT Martin, of course. And they had this really shaky game to open up the season against Miami. They had four turnovers against the Tigers last weekend, too. But it's so weird now that in college football, you used to have to win pretty. You don't necessarily have to win pretty anymore, unless, of course, there's a jumble at the top. But if you survive these games, no matter how you survive them, then you just get put into the equation, right? The SEC champion is going to the college football playoff. I mean, unless you're a three-loss team that upsets Alabama or LSU or anybody else. But if you're Florida and you have one blemish on your record, but you still make it to Atlanta and you win, you're going. It doesn't matter if you're turning the ball over, you look ugly or whatnot. But it's their game coming up with LSU is, these were the kind of games, Ron, that back in the day when I was actively rooting against the success of Urban Meyer and the Gators, that I could always point to and go, well, if they lose that game, then this ride is over. This fun Florida ride is over. Because we only used to take the top two teams in the country. But it's so different now. I don't think it matters if Florida loses to LSU in Baton Rouge at night. Unless they are completely annihilated, if they play a competitive game with the Tigers, and even if they lose, do you know how hard it is to win at LSU at Death Valley at night?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it just is not. And plus, you still have the game against Georgia to win the East. You got South Carolina in Gainesville on the 19th of October. You should beat them. Vanderbilt, Missouri, Florida State. These are not only winnable games, they are expected winnable games for a team like Florida. And they are not sexy right now. They are not the team everybody's kind of pointing to and saying, oh, look how good that team is. They are saying, yeah, you know what? You're 6-0, but you're 7th. We're going to keep you down a little bit. You're not going to vault an Oklahoma team right now. There's not that big win against Auburn is not propelling you over some of the other unbeaten teams in the country that may not have super strong schedules yet. I mean, that's how they're looking in Florida, because Florida has not been a sexy football team. Has not been a team that is really impressive at 6-0. They're not more impressive than Clemson, and we've criticized Clemson for barely showing up in some of these games. They're not obviously better than LSU. They're not Oklahoma. They're not Georgia, right? Georgia has one quality win. That's a home win against Notre Dame. And I think Auburn is better than Notre Dame. And Florida has, you know, a pretty impressive track record at 6-0. They had sniffed in the third spot in the AP or the coaches poll. Both of them have Florida at 7. And so it all plays itself out. I get it. But if they go to Baton Rouge, if they pull off the win, obviously that's a game changer. I mean, that's an eye-opening game changer, because LSU is really good. But even if they go and they lose 31-20 or 31-24, something like that, that's going to still wake up some people with, hey, that one loss on the road, like the way we treat Notre Dame. Notre Dame went to Athens, played with the Bulldogs, almost had an opportunity to win the game. We ain't punishing you that much, Irish. You can still be in the top 10. You can still continue to play in this party. Texas, the same thing. Texas is at 4-1, lost to LSU. No shame in that. Remember, we talked about that. Well, that was a game. Those two teams were outstanding in that game, and it was just somebody had to win. But nothing that Texas did on that night made you think that they're a weaker team than anticipated. Right. So same thing here. I think Florida will get the props that they deserve if they go on and beat LSU. That is back to back good wins in the SEC. So that's going down. USC Notre Dame is going down. Remember when this used to be a big, big, big deal?
I always felt like this was USC Notre Dame was rivalry week.
Rivalry week,
wasn't
right?
It was.
Yes, sure. It was right around late in the season.
Yeah.
Right. Push Bush, right? That was when Leinart pushed Reggie Bush, or Reggie Bush pushed Matt Leinart. I'm sorry. Goes the other way around. I mean, this game was a big deal back in the old days. Keith Jackson.
Back in the old days. When it mattered.
So that's going to go down this weekend. Of course, you got Oklahoma and Texas. Alabama is back from a bye week. They'll face Texas A&M, a ranked opponent. We're hitting into a really good stride in college football right now.
Yeah, finally.
It's just a different landscape. South Carolina plays Georgia. I remember when this game used to be near the beginning of the season. This used to be the way South Carolina used to kick off their SEC schedule. They'd play Georgia in like sometime in mid-September. And now they shake things up a little bit. South Carolina's in trouble. I enjoy watching them when they're on TV, but there are times where I go, oh, this ain't the year, man. This team is, they beat up Kentucky pretty good and had a bye week, but I don't know. The loss to Missouri was bad. The Alabama game was expected, but who knows? If they upset Georgia, how fun will that be for the SEC?
That would shake it up.
If Georgia took a bite on the nose from South Carolina Gamecocks.
Tell you what, I mean, that would be a good weekend for you, because South Carolina would take care of Georgia, but then you would just have to hope Florida at some point loses.
See, that's the dilemma I've always been in, because I don't like Georgia. I'm not a Georgia, I don't root for Georgia at all. And a lot of it's just because the South Carolina. But a loss helps Florida. Yeah. They're absolutely correct. So I run into this dilemma every year where I want to obviously look, and my dislike for Georgia really stems South Carolina. When I was going to school, there was an independent and they still played Georgia. And so I remember when I got there being a newbie into the southeast part of the country, even though not necessarily the Southeastern Conference, but the southeast and the love of college football. I mean, basically right off the bat, they said, obviously you're going to hate Clemson and you better hate Georgia too. And so, you know, you end up with that kind of mindset. But over the last couple of years, a upset over Georgia can help Florida. And that's something I don't need in my house because I told my wife after 21 years, she has more than enough championships to satisfy any college athletics fan. And she needs to calm down a little bit. No more. We got enough Florida Gator t-shirts.
Her response was a little chuckle going,
yeah, right.
There's never enough championships.
Right. See, that's the funny thing about when I have to reiterate this just to remind myself that this happened in my crazy universe. Remember I said earlier, I keep saying what I must have done something in a horrible life to get some of the circumstances that I get sometimes. And I'll never forget the year. You can imagine what it must have been like the year Florida won the football and basketball national championships in the same year.
Yeah.
You want to talk about, I mean, it was painful. And the whole time that Florida was going on to win the national championship in basketball, and I knew this was going to be a reality for me, I was laughing like, oh, this is going to be bad. And sure enough, it was fun. And she had a blast with that. Because to her, her whole thing with Florida had always been about football. Basketball was an afterthought, right? It wasn't even when my wife and I were dating, it wasn't even a basketball school, right? And then Billy Donovan started building something. They made it to the finals and lost to Michigan State. It was building something. And then all of a sudden it was a basketball school. And I was like, oh no, this isn't going to work.
It's not allowed.
Meanwhile, I was celebrating two back-to-back NIT championships.
Right.
In the mid-2000s.
Getting all the top recruit.
Oh, God. South Carolina basketball, man. They were a two seed one time in the tournament in the late 90s, and they lost to Coppin State.
Well, I feel like, but lately they've been doing a little bit better, right?
They're better. They've been better. They went to the Final Four a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
One of the highlights of my sports life was being able to go to Madison Square Garden and watch them on a Sunday beat Florida to go to the Final Four. I mean, just the combination of those two things made me think I wasn't such a bad guy in that previous life. Just sitting at the Madison, I mean, literally sitting at Madison Square Garden going, they're cutting down the nets. They're going to the Final Four. When they show the four logos in Phoenix, the Gamecock logo is going to be one of them. This is unbelievable. And it was a great run. I was at the Friday night game before when they beat Baylor. And then I was at the Florida-Wisconsin game where Florida won it at the buzzer. And so the next 2 days later to see them match up, it was great. But that's the kind of cool rivalry. Those are the kind of fun moments that my wife and I have had over the years between Florida and South Carolina. But rooting for them against Georgia, knowing that this could mean Florida goes to Atlanta, especially this year. Whew, I don't know if I, yikes. But, if Georgia beats Florida at the cocktail party, then it just means they have the one up because their loss is, their loss maybe to South Carolina, but Florida's loss is to Georgia. But this is going to be a good game this weekend in Baton Rouge. I really do. I really, all kidding aside about the rivalry with my wife and all that stuff, the reason I like Florida is I like Dan Mullen. I think Dan Mullen was a great, great hire. He did good things at Mississippi State. Obviously, he had Dak Prescott, which helps. But he did good things at Mississippi State. He's a smart football coach. He was good when he was a coordinator at Florida. He knows the culture. He knows the fan base. He knows the kind of expectations. He knows the recruiting bed, right? So he knows the territory very well in terms of going out and convincing guys to go to Gainesville who have other, options. One other game to watch out for this weekend. Not to watch out for, but it's a little interesting. Clemson plays Florida State, and Florida State is a bad team. But here's the thing. I don't care what your record states. The fact of the matter is Florida State has elite athletes. Florida State did not suffer a recruiting bomb. Like, they have 4 or 5 star players on that team. They're just not coached well by Willie Taggart. But sometimes, and you know this in college sports, sometimes the athleticism of kids takes over and they put themselves in games that we kind of blow them off. Don't blow off Florida State against Clemson just yet. The athleticism and the talent that is inherent in those kids at Florida State, again, not well coached, but if that athleticism takes over, they might be in this game against Clemson. Clemson's not playing very good right now. And that they're, I'm not saying there's an upset, so don't, I'm not going too crazy. I'm just saying don't expect Clemson to roll over Florida State. I think there's some athletes there that might make a difference for the Seminoles. All right, coming up. Every now and then I tell you about a documentary or something that I see in sports that I think you should view. I got one next that I spent yesterday afternoon watching, that it's one of those documentaries I'm still mesmerized about today. Tell you about that next on SB Nation AM.
This is Mike Herzing from Let's Talk Wheels with an automotive tip brought to you by the great folks at Jeep. Listeners email me every week asking which fuel to use, regular or premium. The answer is in your owner's manual. You remember, it's a small book in the glove box that most people never look at until there's a problem. If it says premium recommended, then that means the higher octane helps performance a little. That's it. If it says premium required, then your engine's really designed for it and you need to use it. Luckily, only a few high performance and luxury cars need it, not many. Folks, running premium fuel is not giving your car a treat. But what I would do is spend a few cents more per gallon and buy a top-tier fuel. Top Gear Fuel has more than the minimum additives and cleaners that your engine really needs. All the major brands are top-tier fuels. Simple rule of thumb, folks. Buy your groceries at the grocery store and get your fuel at a major brand station. This is Mike Herzing with Let's Talk Wheels, brought to you by the great folks at Jeep. For more of my tips, go to letstalkwheels.com, and you can find us on Facebook as Let's Talk Wheels.
At Jeep Adventure Days, you'll be ready to take on any forecast head-on. And while some hide from the weather, you'll play surrounded by luxury in the Jeep Grand Cherokee. While others run away from the elements, you'll run toward them in the remarkably efficient Jeep Cherokee. While others see the weather as a foe, you'll see it as a friend in Jeep Compass, with over 70 standard and available safety and security features. And while others seek shelter, you'll find yourself right where you want to be, with nothing, not even a roof, standing between you and the weather with the open-air freedom of Jeep Wrangler or Jeep Gladiator. Hurry in to Jeep Adventure Days for great deals on the most legendary SUV lineup. Jeep. When it rains, we shine. Jeep is a registered trademark.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
Hey, Matt Michelle's going to join us in about 10 minutes. We're going to talk some college football with him from the Orlando Sentinel. 1 out of 4 batteries will fail this winter. Get yours tested for free during Superstart Battery Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts if it needs to be replaced. O'Reilly is a Superstart battery for you. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. I'm really glad you're here today and not moving, because I really wanted to talk about this documentary I saw yesterday. And you're the perfect guy to talk about it with, because you are a soccer guy. And I am not a soccer guy, and so I went into this documentary on Diego Maradona, which was on HBO. It debuted like a week ago, and I watched it on demand yesterday afternoon. And so here's my thing. I remember when I was a kid during the 86 World Cup, I lived next door to a high school soccer player from my school, and he was like him and another guy were big soccer guys. His name was Todd, and the other kid's name was Sean, and they were like big soccer players, and they won the state championship. And he'd come over now that shoot baskets with me and my little brother and whatnot, and he would talk about the World Cup, and we didn't know anything about the World Cup, but he would talk about Diego Maradona, and I didn't know anything about him, and I still didn't really know much about him. And then this documentary comes out, and I'm watching the highlights or what do you call the trailer for it, and I'm like, okay, I kind of need to know about this guy, right? Like, this guy is a really unique story, because they talked about his superstardom and then his drug use and his drug arrest and all of the problems that he had with addiction and women and everything about being an international soccer superstar. So I wanted to watch it on its debut, and I missed it, and I was watching baseball. So one day I said, I'm going to watch this. I'm going to spend an afternoon and go watch this. So I watched it, and as I said last segment, it's one of those documentaries that I'm still thinking about almost, 20-something hours later. I'm still thinking about what I just watched in terms of his life.
Fascinating.
Let me tell you guys, I come up with you, I tell you, I give you suggestions on these sports vignettes or 30 for 30s or whatever. Even if you don't know anything about soccer, couldn't care less about the World Cup, couldn't care about the international game, whatever, this guy's life is absolutely fascinating. And it goes back to a point we were making yesterday about how you don't really know why sports is important to people. Like if an alien from another planet came down and you took him to a football game and he said, why do you guys care about this so much? This seems really weird that you guys are into this. It's really hard to generate an answer. You could say town pride and a number of things, but why is your heart in your throat when there's a penalty kick? Like, why is your heart in your throat on a two out bases loaded batter at the plate thing? Why is that? Why does that exist when the ramifications are not felt by you unless you have money on the game? Like, without money on the game, and that's always the caveat, but just emotionally, right? Just that feeling of, I really desperately want this to happen positively for me. Why? Why is that? And so Diego Maradona's story about playing in Naples, I found amazing. Naples was considered by so many people in Italy to be the ghetto of Italy. It was a dump. It was where the poor people lived, and they made no bones about this. They used to chant at the Naples soccer team that Diego Maradona was on. They used to chant what gutter trash they were. That was the chant, right? Well, they would stand there, and the opposing Italian cities would yell at the Napolese players to tell them what rotten human beings they were because they were Neapolitan. They were from Naples. That's how bad the reputation was. And he lifted them to a championship twice while he was there. And the town celebrated, get this, the first championship that they won in 87, the town celebrated for 2 months. That's how long they celebrated in the streets when they won this Italian cup. 2 months. He was a god. There was a story of him going to the doctors, going to get a routine blood test. And the woman, the nurse, stole the vial of blood and dropped it off at church, at a local church, as a holy relic. That's how popular he was.
And the crazy thing is when you watch it and you get to know a little bit about his life, it's almost as if it was a character created.
Absolutely. Because absolutely. That's a great way to put it.
It's almost surreal to think that there's a person like this that actually existed.
Oh,
who still exists today.
So they go to the World Cup in Mexico City in 86. Yep. And I think he's like 25 years old, right? Which is still really young.
Has an infamous game.
He has this infamous game, the hand of God goal against England. And then he has this game, this run. It's got to be one of the greatest goals in the history of the sport.
It's one of the go-to highlights. When he picks up the ball at midfield on the right sideline.
Passes everybody, takes it all the way, passes every defender that comes at him. He maneuvers around them. He just flips the ball around and just gets past everybody. He's doing this like four or five times.
It's always the go-to goal when you're just trying to describe who's Maradona. That's the goal that you show.
So imagine if an American announcer did this to any sport, right? Whether it was about Tom Brady or Justin Verlander or LeBron James or anybody, right? The radio announcer for the Argentine soccer team, he's describing Maradona with the ball going right past these defenders, like weaving past these defenders, and he kicks in the goal. He just starts crying on the air, and he starts screaming, "Thank you, God, for football. Thank you, God, for Maradona." Like, imagine if a radio announcer yelled that out as Verlander struck out the side with the bases loaded or something. Like, you would go, well, that's a little over the top. But it wasn't over the top. It wasn't crazy. That's where he was. And the way his life spiraled with cocaine, drugs, the association with the Italian mob, I'm not kidding when I tell you this is one of the most fascinating character studies I've ever seen in sports about a guy who had everything and didn't want everything. It's an amazing documentary. Watch it. It was on HBO.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. Some big games of college football coming up this weekend, and some big games that happened over the weekend. Matt Michelle joins us. He's from the Orlando Sentinel, joining us to talk some about the good old college football game. What's up, man?
Pretty good. How are you doing this morning?
Good, good. Let's talk about Florida for a second. That's a big win in Gainesville against a good Auburn team. Did you buy Florida before this game? I'm not saying it's a shock. I mean, Florida was, you know, Florida's Florida. But were you buying the Gators and what they were doing before this win against Auburn?
Yeah, I think, you know, you looked at what they did, you know, defensively, you know, starting out the season. I think they're, this is, again, one of the backbones of this team is their defense. And, you know, they looked good doing it, you know, and they were able to get those turnovers. And we saw a little bit of that against Auburn. You know, they were able to be disruptive, you know, got the Bo Nix. You know, that forced him into some bad throws, and they were able to take advantage of that with those interceptions, especially in the red zone. So I knew going in that Florida had the kind of defense that could contend with Auburn. The question was always, in my mind, going to be offense. You know, I know losing Felipe Franks, you know, was a big blow for them. And Kyle Trask is a good quarterback. I don't know if he's an elite quarterback, but their offense was able to kind of pick up and make up for some of that in this game. And you saw some of that with the running attack and then Trask being able to, you know, basically, you know, command the offense without turning the ball over. So, you know, it was kind of, it may not have been pretty at times, but it was the kind of win that you expected maybe out of a Florida team.
If you could figure out a game plan for what they do well, and again, with that strong defense, against a team like LSU that is now so different than any LSU team we've seen offensively, what would be that key for Florida?
Well, I think the key for Florida is pressure on Joe Burrow. I mean, they got to find ways to mix it up, you know, to find ways to get extra players back there to be disruptive. You know, they can't let Joe Burrow sit in the pocket and, you know, just kind of pick them apart. We've seen their offense. You know, I mean, it's the number one, you know, scoring offense in the country, which I don't think I'd ever think I would hear myself say about it.
I know, right?
but you know, I mean, this is going to be for them. They have to get in there. They have to make sure that they can be disruptive. If you can make Joe Burrow make some bad throws, sort of like what happened last year, you know, make him make some bad decisions. And then, like I said, you get some of those turnovers, especially if you can flip the field quickly. I think that's going to be crucial for Florida. I think if they can get in there and get some points and jump out early on, and maybe take the crowd out of the game, I think that's going to be huge for Florida. So to me, it's all about being disruptive, making sure Joe Burrow doesn't just sit back in the pocket and pick you apart. Because when you've seen that so far this season, when he's had that time, he's able to really take advantage of it and put up a lot of points.
With this LSU team, and I kind of look at it, and your I would love to hear your thoughts on what they are today. Well, we're like the old LSU team. It means we're big up front. We're big on the lines. You know, we can pound you. We can play very physical. And we've also added this amazing passing game. Or have they flipped that switch where they are, look, we're a really good passing team, and if you kind of study us, you'll figure us out. Or has this addition meant that, oh, this might be the added thing that puts them over the top?
Well, I think gives them. I think they've made a kind of a more of switch to the passing game. You know, you look at their rushing attack. You know, it's just kind of average. You know, so I think they rank 75th in the country running the football. I think the passing game really kind of has opened some things up, and it allows them to kind of do some different things as well. To me, I think what's a little bit different from this LSU team is, you know, as much as they're a strong defense, this isn't the type of defense that we've seen in the past. You know, I think they still give up points at times. We saw what happened against Vanderbilt. You know, even the blowout win, they gave up 38 points. You know, they gave up 38 to Texas. I think there's opportunities there for teams to score on them, which I think in the past they were a little bit stronger. But it'll be interesting to see if, you know, Florida can take away the passing game a little bit. They can make it difficult. Can LSU, do they have enough to get into that running game? Do they have enough to maybe switch things up a little bit to kind of open that thing up? I think if I was LSU, I might switch it up just a little bit this week just to kind of see what you can get out of it. Because I think there's opportunities to run the football against Florida, but you have to do it and you have to pick and choose your spots.
All right, staying in the Sunshine State for a second. Florida State with Willie Taggart. I'm assuming, man, you can correct me if I'm wrong. I'm assuming there's still 5-star, 4-star kids on this team that just haven't been put in the right situations or maybe miscoached or whatever it is going on. Is that a frustration? I mean, is that the frustration here, or has the talent pool been bare over the last couple of years? What exactly is going on, and why isn't this team better than they are?
Well, you know, no, they do have 4 or 5-star, you know, caliber players on this team. I think that's part of the frustration is, you know, that Willie has done a decent job recruiting, has brought in some of these players. I think that some of the backlash of this is the fact that he's losing some players to schools that Florida State wasn't used to losing players to. You know, I think that they've done a pretty good job of recruiting, and now you're seeing some of these kids maybe going elsewhere. You know, I think also the fact that this is a team that struggled offensively last year. This is a team that, you know, didn't look very good offensively, and that's why he went out and brought in Kendall Briles, thinking that maybe they could kind of find a way to bring a spark to this offense. You know, they were putrid protecting the quarterback last year. They couldn't protect him at all. They haven't really developed a quarterback since Jameis Winston. You know, I mean, they seem to be kind of, you know, rotating guys in and out. You know, DeAndre Francois was supposed to be that guy, and he looked that way a little bit at the beginning, but, you know, things fell apart for that situation. So I think there's some concern there. I also think defensively, I mean, they rank 109th in total defense. This is not typical Florida State. I mean, Florida State likes to, you know, is up in your face. You know, they've got great passing. They used to have great secondaries, great passing defenses. That hasn't been the case, for a while. So I just think there's some overall frustration. And, I mean, listen, they've won the last 2 games. They seem to have settled down a little bit. I mean, obviously getting, you know, Clemson is not going to probably help their statistics and going to help things. But if you could at least showcase that maybe you're making some improvements along the way, there's still an opportunity for this team to be bowl eligible. I've always felt like going into this year, if Florida State could get to that 6 or 7 win mark, I think that would be huge for them considering what they were last year.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Red River Showdown, rivalry, shootout, whatever they're calling it out in the Cotton Bowl. This is such a great rivalry. It's such a classic, and it's so good. But is Oklahoma a little different this year? I mean, look, 3rd straight year, but with the similar style quarterback. In terms of what you see from the Sooners, is this a different Oklahoma team? Is it better? Is it worse going up against a Texas team that has lived up to what we thought they were going into the season?
Well, I think this is a better Oklahoma team. And I think what they did is the thing they had to do, which was improve on defense. You know, that was their Achilles heel. You know, they couldn't, you know, they were putting up tons of points and they had to outscore them because their defense, you know, was giving up just as many yards and points. So this defense is a little bit different. It's a little bit better under Alex Grinch. I still think there's some concerns, you know, that they still at times get a little sloppy when they could be really kind of putting the hammer down. Offensively, this team is just as probably just as good, maybe even a little bit better. You know, you look at what Jalen Hurts is able to provide. Again, a guy who's shown some maturity in the pocket. He fits in that system so well. And I think even though Kansas was able to do some things that we haven't seen teams do against Oklahoma this year, able to get a little bit more disruption with some pass rush, you know, on Jalen Hurts, I still think this is, you know, this is a really good Oklahoma team. Now, that being said, this is the Red River rivalry showdown, whatever you want to call it. And this thing has always kind of been up in the air. You know, I think Texas will come in there with an attitude that they need to get this win. Oklahoma needs this win in a way more than Texas because their best win so far this season is Texas Tech, when you think about it. So I think if they're going to continue to make a statement, even make a push towards the playoff, I mean, they've got to get some quality wins. And you look at their schedule and you look at the Big 12, outside of Texas and maybe Baylor, it's a little thin right now. So I think Oklahoma needs this win. But on Texas's front, you know, again, they feel like they've got enough firepower with Sam Ellinger, and they feel like maybe they can do the things that can slow down Oklahoma. But, I mean, again, we saw what LSU was able to do against Texas, and I think Oklahoma's offense might be just a tad bit better.
All right, rankings aside, and just the overall eye test, and I know we're early, and we still have some attrition left in terms of these conferences, but where is the Pac-12 in your eyes? Is it because it got a lot of early love? It's kind of died down a little bit. Where is the conference? Because I know that was a real big question mark as to where it was compared to the other conferences when you're only taking 4 teams in the end.
Well, I think they're still kind of on the outside looking in right now when you look at things. I mean, I think this is a conference that, you know, had 4 or 5 teams ranked, And somehow, again, like it did last year, they kind of keep knocking each other down. You know, I mean, you look at what happened last week with Washington. Washington was probably one of the best chances that the Pac-12 had maybe to getting a team, you know, into the playoff. And Washington loses to an unranked Stanford team that's been struggling. I mean, so that was a huge blow for them. Oregon, you know, gets by a good Cal team but barely survived. Now it looks like Oregon may be the best shot they've got. It just feels like they're just a step off with everyone else. You know, it feels like that they're not right there, you know, and I don't know if that's a case of, you know, parity in the league, you know, which is too much parity almost to the point of where, you know, you continue to knock each other down, or if it's the fact of, you know, that maybe they need to beef up the non-conference schedule a little bit. Maybe they need to be a little bit tougher. I think that was the knock over the last two or three years from the selection committee, was that the Pac-12 scheduling wasn't nearly as tough as everyone else. And I think it's going to be tough. Listen, if you're going to have one or two losses, even if you're a conference champion out of the Pac-12, I just don't think that's good enough to get in. I mean, when you're looking at the top of the rankings right now with Oklahoma's and Alabama's and Clemson's and, you know, I mean, who may be undefeated or may have only have one loss. And I think it's going to be tough for them. I mean, the SEC could very easily have two teams again this year in the rankings. And you look at maybe what Oklahoma and Ohio State are doing and Clemson. I mean, you need to be playing at that elite level. The Pac-12 right now just isn't there.
Matt, always good talking to you, my friend. We will catch up soon. I love your insight as always, my friend.
All right, thanks a lot. Take care.
You got
good
it.
Afternoon.
Matt Michelle, Orlando Sentinel, on some college football games. Likes LSU. I like LSU, too. I think it's – if you're an LSU Tigers fan, I would be curious to know what your thoughts are as you watch this new offense. Do you say to yourself, okay, we've got the right guy and the right coach, and so all, or do you look back at the Les Miles years when they had that different style of play and go, man, what were they waiting for? This is really fun. This is really working out really well. I mean, it's a different way of viewing it, obviously. You have to have the right personnel to run this kind of passing game. You have to have the right quarterback. They always sometimes didn't have those in place, and you got to kind of do what, you know, when you have Leonard Fournette, run the ball, right? When Leonard Fournette's at your school, run the ball. But I wonder if they're looking at this now going, man, what were we waiting for? All those years we were looking for that one extra thing that would get us over the hump against Alabama, and this might be it. We'll see, obviously, when they play, and it'll be a real doozy, but it might, you know, you go, man, I wonder if it's a, if we just had gotten to this style a little sooner, would we have taken some shares of the SEC West? It's SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
All right, this hour of SB Nation Radio presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. What a day today in Major League Baseball. This afternoon, Atlanta taking on the St. Louis Cardinals and then the Los Angeles Dodgers against the Washington Nationals. Both of these are game fives. Both of these are going to decide the fate of the NLCS. I can't wait. This is going to be fun. The tension is going to be so thick you could pour it on pancakes, Ron Culver.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm a little I'm a little nervous, to be honest.
Wait till tomorrow. Wait till tomorrow and the city of Houston finds themselves in a little bit of a Tampa Bay trouble.
That's easier for me to stomach than tonight.
That's true. That's true.
You know, I just hope that they bring it.
What a wild thing baseball is. It takes you on this journey for 6 months. And then you get to here and you're like, wait a minute, hold on. Wait a minute, we just started this thing a week ago. What are you talking about? We're down to the last game.
Yeah.
What do you mean? It's one thing when you're the Orioles and you're just playing it out to be over with, but when you're the Dodgers and you've cruised and you're like, okay, can we get to October now? It's like, yeah, we can get to October now, and you're going to face a team that one time had Bryce Harper and doesn't have him anymore.
And that's the craziest thing.
That is crazy.
That's like that's a story in itself, just with the Nationals. That we made it to the postseason, we don't have Bryce Harper. Bryce Harper, where are you?
12 games below 500 near the beginning of the season, like I think the first 2 months in. And they went, all right, let's turn this ship around. Let's get this thing right. One win away from going to the NLCS.
Yeah.
Goodness gracious. Atlanta, St. Louis, I don't know who's going to win this one. Flip a coin. I have no idea.
No, this has been a good series, too.
It has been really good. And a lot of guys have stepped up.
But I would say out of the four, the least watched.
Out of the four, the least watched team?
Yeah, no, I'm saying this series.
Oh, yeah. This series, yeah.
Out of the four series that have been going on, this one's probably the least watched.
I agree.
Most people don't even know that it's happening.
You know what was a good story in Game 4 with those Cardinals and Braves was Yadier Molina. He is a real, like, treasure in St. Louis, and he got the game-tying RBI in the 8th and then the game-winning sac fly RBI in the 10th. There's something about when your team wins, and then it also is wins with kind of an older player that's been a staple of your championships and your success and whatnot. Yadier Molina is a St. Louis treasure, and he came through for them when he needed him the most. I don't know. I like the Braves in this one. I like the Braves at home, and the Braves are a spunky young team. Phil, you know, Mike Foltynewicz, I don't know much about him. I know Jack Flaherty's been pitching really good, but
yeah, it's the Braves team. They're just arrogant and cocky enough not to realize the magnitude of the moment.
Sure. I agree completely. But I'm going to give you a little, confidence. Walker Buehler believes in Walker Buehler. All right.
Well, of course he should believe in Walker Buehler.
He believes in Walker Buehler. So don't, you know, if you have the right guy on the mound,
he should believe in all the great walkers of life.
That's right. And the Ferris and all the Buehlers like Ferris.
Yes.
Wasn't he confident when he built that contraption that made it look like he was snoring in bed?
Exactly.
I tried when I was a kid to build that same thing and it did not work.
The most fascinating thing about Ferris Buehler is that he threw the baseball to turn it off.
Yeah, I know. Oh, right.
That was
amazing.
I think that was the most impressive thing he did that day.
And the same baseball that he caught the foul ball with at Wrigley Field that afternoon.
Hurt his finger.
That's right. Remember, that was filmed that was released at a time where the Cubs only played day games. Remember that time?
Yes.
Where they didn't even have lights at that stadium.
Yeah, they might want to go back to that.
Yeah, right. SB Nation Radio.